been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Wednesday, November the 9th, day after the big election show. It's the Best Stocks, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, and Barry Kite, our chartered financial analyst. And just at first blush, it seems like the market doesn't really like the results of the election, or it doesn't like the uncertainty that's still out there. I'm not sure which it is, but it doesn't seem like there's going to be much change, very little change to the economy, the direction of the economy going forward. That's just my takeaway. And the market's responding this morning. The Dow's down 150 right now. That's a 0.5%. The Dow is sitting right at about 33,000 these days. The S&P is down about a 0.5%. It's sitting right at about 3,800 these days. NASDAQ down 0.75%. It is off the lows here from the morning. The NASDAQ is down 78 points, 10,538. The small caps continue to get roughed up. They got roughed up yesterday, too. They're down 1.2% today. That's the Russell 2000. Crude oil down a big $1.63 to $87.28. Maybe they think there will be a little more hope for the oil companies out there, which would produce more oil, which would drive oil prices down. The 10 years at 4.15. Bitcoin getting roughed up. We're going to talk about that today. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Today it's Inverse Funds leading the way. It's been the stocks leading the way the last couple of days. This is Bill Gunderson of Gunderson Capital Management. I would just say that the overall reaction by the market today is, you know what, it's not that big of a deal. At the end of the day, I expected there to be a little more contentious races and claims of foul and this and that, but everything seems to be kind of settled except for Georgia and Arizona. And that's going to hold a lot of keys to the Senate especially. But it looks like the Republicans are going to barely take the House, and probably the Senate's going to remain the same. So we'll see. But the market's just kind of going ho-hum here and not seeing a lot of changes to the various, the direction of the economy. Let's just put it that way. The red wave failed to materialize. Now, Barry, I think in the days leading up to yesterday, it was the oil stocks that were kind of leading the market, maybe a little bit of tech. I think that the market was expecting a different outcome. Well, I think most people, no matter which newslet I watched, whether it was Fox News or CNN or MSNBC, they were all bracing themselves for a red wave, and that seemed to be what the market was kind of factoring in also, because it's had a rally here for the last several days. Didn't you see the same thing?
Yeah, and I think, as you mentioned, I think you said that you figured, nothing would really be settled after the first, after Election Day. Of course, still, likely going to be the Republicans taking the House, of course, by how much. It looks like it'll end up being a somewhat thin margin. But like you said, I think, the market already had priced in kind of, a gridlock type scenario in terms of government. And of course, I think the market was probably expecting a little bit, more on the red wave side, you would imagine. And of course, not much change in yields today in terms of interest rates, but certainly the equity markets are showing that. And the big story, kind of probably crypto's probably happy that you've got all this election news, because there's a
man,
huge crypto crunch going on at the moment. So.
Could be a, you know, a big problem like the financial crisis. It's a crypto crisis. It doesn't affect the banks and the whole financial system. But I have always been very skeptical of cryptocurrency, and I do have, I haven't looked at my inverse BITI, B-I-T-I ETF.
Probably looking pretty good.
I think it's looking pretty good today. We'll get to that crypto story in a little bit. My biggest issue, why has Florida got their results out and it's done, and we're still waiting on Nevada, Arizona, Georgia?
Yeah, not just the time, and it's not just a time change thing, right? It's yeah, it's how they count votes, how they collect them in terms of mail-in ballots and everything from that standpoint. But yeah, it's, you know, pretty decisive, you know, down in Florida yesterday, and then of course, you know, as the time zones, it seems the further it goes, we go west, that you know, the longer it kind of takes to figure out what's going on. It kept me up a little late last night.
Yeah,
you know. Later than
it's
I was expecting.
Always like, why can't these states just do what Florida does or do what some of the – we had our results in South Carolina. We were the very first ones to hear the results of our Senate race, our governor race. And there was – in our, I would say in South Carolina there was a red wave, just looking at the results. Florida, where there was a red wave for sure, but not so much anywhere else. And I think until things are cleared up, the market is probably, and of course tomorrow, probably even bigger than the election. Maybe is the CPI report.
Right.
Which
and
way will
jobless
that
claims,
go?
And jobless claims in the same day.
So. Yeah, I mean that CPI report tomorrow is going to really move the market one way or another, because you know the market is waiting for a Fed pivot, a pivot away from the monstrous. Interest rate hikes that they've been on, this path that they've been on, and continue on until they see some signs of the economy starting to slow down, and especially the job market. They need to see some. Unfortunately, they need to see those initial jobless claims going up. Now, they are going up. We saw a lot of companies this week laying folks off. Twitter, number one. And now we've got news out of Meta with a more definite number of how many people are going to be laid off. Okay, we have another big prediction in the market today. Recently, we've gone over Bank of America. Predicting that the bottom will be sometime in the middle of next year. Goldman Sachs really lowering their price target and their earnings estimates for next year, the year after that. Today it's UBS. They predicted that Wall Street would suffer a renewed sell-off headed into the middle of 2023 with a level of 3,200. Wow, we're at 3,800 now in the S&P during Q2, representing a reasonable trough. The forecast is based on the U.S. sinking into a recession for much of 2023. And, you know, obviously, like I say, the elections last night, the results don't seem to have much to do with changing any direction that the economy is headed in. And I think that's why the market's a little bit disappointed, or just not. It didn't expect the results that it got. They say this is UBS now. Okay, this is a big firm. The setup for 2023 is essentially a race between easing inflation and financial conditions versus the coming hit to growth. Okay, so you know they're on Goldman Sachs. Side.
Yeah, and Jamie Dimon mentioned it. What was it, that he thinks will be in a recession in 6 to 9 months? So you know, that timing's right in the middle of 2023, pretty
yes,
much. Right?
And I'm on the side of the hit to growth. There's a hit to growth. Goldman Sachs came out on Monday and said there will be no S&P 500 earnings growth next year. If the market follows earnings, which I wholeheartedly believe it does and have witnessed it do that over the last 23 years, there should be very little movement in the market next year. This 3,800 that we're at now, if anything, has more downside risk than upside potential. Now, you would think I would be pumping the market and saying, oh, this is a great, and that's better for me, right? That's better for us. It's in our best interest. But I have always been a guy who, you know, will have to make money however we can in the market, depending on what kind of hand we're dealt. UBS does not think we'll be dealt a very good hand next year in the market. They're the third big one in a row to weigh in on that. But they do have a bright side when we come back. This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite. Today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson and chartered financial analyst Barry Kite. Just to sum up what UBS is predicting, they see a 16% drop in stocks by mid next year as the U.S. sinks into a recession. But they think by the end of the year, it could get back to 3,800. Actually, 39. Well, that's about where we are now. So, you know, I just think this kind of lends a little more credence to really the only way to handle this market is a little bit of back and forth swing trading. You know, taking advantages of some of the sectors. Like this year, it's been the energy sector. That's presented some opportunity. The inverse funds have presented some opportunity in the really vulnerable areas of the market, like the bond market. Like Europe, like the emerging markets, like China, et cetera, like ARK funds. So, you know, I just, if it's going to go sideways, if it's going to go down to 3,300 like UBS says, and then close the year at 3,900, Goldman Sachs is at 3,800 for their target price for the end of next year, you're going to have to do something in the middle, right, Barry? The zigs and the zags you're going to have to play just a little bit here with a little bit of swing trade. Otherwise, you just sit tight and you see a lot of volatility and you see at the end of the day no gains one way or another. But, of course, these are just estimates by big firms. They think, however, on the upside next year, this depends on if consumer inflation falls faster than expected. I don't know. We don't know what's going to become of inflation. Then they say the S&P could get up to 4,400. Okay, so inflation's going to be a very big thing to watch here going forward. Okay, I've noticed some real weakness in Tesla here recently. We own a little Tesla right now. And, well, we find out that Elon disposed $4 billion. So maybe that selling pressure is over.
Yeah, he had to sell a little bit to cover that Twitter.
It says the sales came in heavy batches sold by his trust on November 4th, November 7th, and November 8th. And you can see those big down days on a pretty good volume, especially yesterday and the day before. There was some big volume in selling. And of course, yeah, it's to raise money. We knew he was going to have to do that, but I didn't think it would impact the stock that much. His net worth, the stock move means that Musk net worth dropped below 200 billion. Imagine, you know, I remember when a billionaire, let alone a 200 billionaire,
right,
And I guess we got a new billionaire in California that won the Powerball lottery. That's it. That's the easy way, I guess, to become a billionaire overnight at the Altadena gas station. Okay, now this crypto story. Let's take a look and see what's happening with Bitcoin today. I look at GBTC. I've been saying for several months, that's a really weak chart. That's a terrible chart on Bitcoin, the Bitcoin Trust, and on the Bitcoin itself. It's been going sideways. It's been kind of drifting lower. And now all of a sudden you've got cryptocurrency exchange, FTX, which I think is one of the big ones, has had to halt processing on chain withdrawal requests from its clients. How would you like to own a bunch of Bitcoin at FTX?
Yeah, it's everybody running for the door at the same time. Yeah, I was reading. I think Binance is trying to, help essentially kind of bail out FTX, and so that's causing selling pressure. I saw an article where Silvergate Capital, they have some exposure, apparently some credit exposure linked to FTX. So we'll see how far the thing trickles out, but it's certainly an interesting story to follow.
Well, I mean, it's just your good old run on the bank. Growing up in the San Diego area, there would be a lot of people in San Diego that would cross the border and put their money into the Mexican banks because they paid 16-18%. And then all of a sudden you'd hear about a rumor, or they would devalue the currency, and then you'd run down there to get your money out of the bank. You couldn't get your money out of the bank because there was a run on the bank, and they were out of money. And it's happened in a lot of different assets over the years during different time periods. And right now, it says over the past 3 days, FTX experienced some $6 billion of withdrawals, way above the typical average flow. And that gives them a liquidity problem. So somebody's got to come in and bail them out. To give them liquidity. The client withdrawals followed Binance CEO Zhangping Zhao's recent remarks about his crypto exchange offloading the rest of its sizable holdings in FTX token. So they have their own token, the digital token issued by FTX due to recent revelations. He likely referenced CoinDesk's earlier story regarding the finances of SBF's hedge fund, Alameda Research. Well, if you built a hedge fund, if you built a brokerage firm, I have seen some brokerage firms out there, they market themselves, they're trying to sell themselves or whatever. They've built their whole model on crypto. I just think it's going to all blow up. That's what I think. It's below 20,000 right now. Bitty, B-I-T-I, is the inverse. Man, it had a day yesterday. I own just a little bit, not that much. Bitty Short Bitcoin Strategy is put out by ProShares. It's one-time inverse Bitcoin. A massive day yesterday, and it's up another 3.33% today on 8 times normal volume. So a lot going on that is not good, liquidity concerns with one of the biggest Bitcoin exchanges. Okay, well, one more when we come back. Another macro outlook. I read them all. And if there's one from a big-sized firm out there, I want you to hear it just so you know what all the different opinions are out there, what the predictions are, if there's a kind of a consensus of predictions out there. But this one says that the 2023 macro backdrop could resemble the dot-com crash. I was there during the dot-com crash. We'll be right back. Back here to the second half. The market has taken a decided turn south since we began the show. Dow down 254 now, and the NASDAQ down about 1.2% right now. I don't think the market got the results that it had been baking into the cake in the days leading up to the election. And I don't think that anything happened yesterday that is really going to change the direction of the economy, the U.S. economy right now. And we continue to have a lot of big firms weighing in with their own predictions. The other one that caught my eye today was Alfonso Pecatiello, former head of a $20 billion investment portfolio. He's comparing next year's macroeconomic landscape to be strikingly similar to the dot-com crash. Now, I don't agree with him because I think a lot of the dot-com crash has already happened, Barry. When you look at, you know, these innovation funds and out there on the horizon type funds, they've had 75% of their value disappear.
Yeah, biggest difference is they just didn't go to zero.
Yeah.
You know, to me, the companies still exist, and you've got, you know, a name, you know some of these companies. I mean, I think we looked at Zoom a few days ago. I mean, you know, down roughly, you know, I think if I remember right around 80% for the year. Take a Roblox today, getting crushed by, you know, at one point was down about 17%. You know, those names are you know, you look at the value, and it's essentially a dot-com bubble. The only difference is that, you know, the company still, you know, at least at the moment, still exists, right?
Now, he does make a good point, however. The big difference that I can see between then and now, okay, now remember, back then, the NASDAQ lost 79% before it was over. And we're down maybe 35%. So I do think there's more downside risk, absolutely, to the NASDAQ. And I think the two biggest differences, which are worse than what I saw in 2000, is the amount of coordinated fiscal and monetary stimulus, which is now rapidly getting unwound. We didn't have that in 2000, not like this. And we didn't have the inflation back in 2000 like we have today. So that's a wild card there. We don't really know how that's going to play out yet. We're going to get a good clue on Thursday. That's tomorrow. Oh, my gosh. Can I stay in bed tomorrow? I'm calling in sick. We'll get the CPI at about, 8:30 in the morning, something like that. Okay.
Yeah, we'll have some time to dive through it before we hop on.
Yeah, you know, the market doesn't seem to think it's going to be a very good report the way it's reacting right now. The big winner today, a huge winner in the biotech arena, there was absolutely no indication whatsoever. I'm looking at MAC. Let me just see where it was ranked yesterday. MACK. The name of the stock is Mary MAC. Let's see, MAC was ranked 3,863. There was virtually no indication whatsoever that they were going to get these kind of results. It had a momentum grade of B. That's the only thing I can really point to there, but there's just no indication. What happened with them today? U.S. biotech Merrimack is now up 198%. It's tripled so far today. After its French partner for cancer therapy, Onivivide, said that the drug as a combination therapy met the primary endpoint in late-stage trial for a form of pancreatic cancer. Well, you know, it seems like that's a pretty common cancer. We see a lot. I see a lot of people, whether movie stars or athletes or whatever, dying of pancreatic cancer. This would be good news if we can find something to slow that down. But that thing is up. What's the symbol? MAC. M-A-C-K. The company is headquartered in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which has a pretty good, of course, around the Harvard University area. MAC, huge, tripling today. Disney. All right, well, there's another reason that the Dow is down. Disney is getting thumped today. Disney is down 11.2%. And, you know, it's kind of been the same story for Disney where they've been doing fairly well with their theme parks. Well, yeah, I mean, what for a family of four, Barry, what does it cost? $1,000 easily for a day at Disneyland?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Per day,
oh,
for sure.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I mean, ticket wise, I mean, you're looking at close to $200 nowadays. So, I mean,
that's why I go to the Coastal Carolina Fair at Ladson. Right? That's
right,
where I was
yeah.
at last weekend, going down a giant slide with one of my grandchildren,
oh, wow.
Grandpa, and eating corn dogs with the kids, mustard all over my face. We had a great time.
Didn't cost you, you know, over $1,000.
We had free tickets. We had free tickets to get in and wristbands. All the rides. The only thing that cost money
was the corn
a little
dog.
Bit of food. A $7 corn dog. But I put $7 worth of mustard on it just to get my money's worth. Okay, Disney is down 11.4% today. That is a big reason that the Dow is down. And I can just tell you, I get portfolios transferred to me on a regular basis from other firms. And over the last many months, if a portfolio comes to me and it's got Disney in it, I sell the Disney. I mean, I just don't see anything there that is going well for Disney right now. They've got the theme parks, they've got the merchandise, they've got the streaming business, but it's just kind of become more of a non-growth situation. So their quarter comes in. Their earnings are down 19% versus the same quarter last year, and their sales are only up 9%. They've been averaging more in the 20% area. So a really bad report out of Disney, and it's getting thumped, down 11.3%. Now, Warren Buffett's big stock, which is in the S&P 500, Occidental Petroleum, OXY, it's down 4.8%. The oil stocks are not having that great of a day. Oil's down a couple dollars a barrel. The energy patch didn't really get the red wave that I'm sure it would have liked to have seen. And Occidental Petroleum, one of Buffett's biggest, it's basically the one he's been buying this year. I mean, backing up the truck to OXY.
Basically, yeah. Every,
I don't know what kind of truck he
every
drives.
Month, it's like every month it just comes by for to buy some more of that thing.
Before long, he'll say, look, I own the whole company. Okay, the gambling stock's not doing well. California rejected. I don't understand that. I mean, California votes for anything, pretty much, that's, out there. But they rejected sports betting propositions. I can just say, being a former Californian, the Indian gaming lobby is very strong there. And California feels that, you know, they're obligated, the Native Americans, they have the casinos, they have the slot machines. And they're just not really willing to spread the wealth at all in California. And so DraftKings and all of those companies are dipping today. It wasn't expected to pass. but California not going, voted down to allow online sports betting. At the same time, that's where that billion-dollar lottery, they got no problem with the lottery.
Winning the $2 billion
Now, the guy that owns the gas station, he got $1 million.
Yeah, he gets a
for
cut.
For selling
right?
it.
Right, yeah.
Meta to cut 11,000 jobs as it looks to slash cost and affirm. Well, you know what? There's going to be a lot of Meta and Twitter workers floating around out there if you're looking for some good help. Maybe they'll get a job at Rumble or DWAC or one of the other social media companies out there. But that's a lot of layoffs there in the last couple of weeks in California in the tech sector. And then the last one here before we go to break, a housing stock, D.R. Horton, one of the biggest ones, they actually had a good report. They're up 6.3%, which is kind of surprising with the current state of interest rates, the 30-year being up around 7%. Okay, what's moving today when we come back? This is Bill Gunderson and Barry Kite.
You gotta go the way you wanna go. Do what you wanna do. Live whoever you wanna do.
And welcome back to the final segment of today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. Oil down $2.06 per barrel today. I don't know if it's pricing in a recession. Or with maybe the GOP taking the House, that they'll try to grease the skids a little bit to increase the oil production here in the U.S. But oil is down $2. The interest rate's pretty steady today in front of tomorrow's big CPI report. Bitcoin's down $1,375 today. S&P down 33, NASDAQ down 120 right now, and the Dow down 270. So kind of not, it's pretty obvious that the market didn't get, usually the market is pretty good, you know, predicting elections and economic reports, usually. But it doesn't seem like they had it right. And, of course, a lot of pollsters and a lot of pundits didn't have yesterday's election right either. Okay, so a couple stocks here on the upside. One that I like, I've owned it, I own a little bit of it. It's having a huge day today. It's the non-lethal stock, Axon Enterprises. Now, it used to be called, what did it used to be called? What are those things you fire, that the electric charge and bam, you know, disable somebody and it's non-lethal? I can't think of the name right now.
Oh, not a stun gun, but Taser.
Taser. Okay, the name of the company used to be Taser, and they changed it to Axon Enterprises because I think they branched out into a lot of other things. But still, their main thing is their advanced electronic control devices for law enforcement, which shoots tasers at people. Man, what a report. That's the stock of the day. Taser is up 17.2%. $25 a share. So, yes, I do own a little bit of Taser. AXON, and their quarter that they just reported today, their sales were up 34% year over year. Their earnings were actually down 49%, but there must be some extraordinary items in there somewhere. But it is having, let me just look at the news really fast here on Taser, because they were one of the companies reporting earnings today. Axon. We did a lot of stocks here today. Man, look at them all. A lot of companies in the, okay, so they beat, okay, their earnings beat by 11 cents and their revenue beat by 32 cents.
Wow.
So AXON, big day for them. Now, the other leaders in the market today, you know, it's not a good day when the leaders are inverse ETFs. China, back on the downside, you know, it's all China has to do is float a rumor that they're going to ease up their COVID, zero COVID policy, and all of a sudden the Chinese market soars, and then all of a sudden it gets back to its direction that it's been in for a long time. Yang is three times inverse China. It's up 8.8% today. Now, the emerging markets have a lot of China usually in them. So we still own some inverse funds on the emerging markets. And because of the rumor going around that China was going to back off of their zero COVID policy, it was one person in China saying it that has a supposedly in on the know. We continue to hold on to our inverse ETFs on the emerging markets because I feel that if America's headed for a recession, which seems to be the consensus, I mean, everyone from J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon, on down to UBS, over to Bank of America, et cetera, that the U.S. is going to go into a recession next year. We just had a positive quarter. So that means this quarter that we're in right now or the first two quarters of next year are more than likely, this is the consensus estimate, to be negative. And that will be the recession. And more than likely, the biggest cause of us going into a recession would be rising interest rates. I mean, that's the whole idea of the Fed hiking rates is to slow down the economy. And that's where you hear those terms, soft landing or hard landing. A soft landing means they're able to accomplish getting inflation under control without putting the economy into a recession. Now, I think it was last week that Mohammed Al-Erian, who used to be the head of PIMCO, he says is getting very unlikely for a soft landing. And my newsletter last Friday had kind of a jet coming in for a hard landing on a tarmac. That seems to be more of the consensus right now, that this interest rate hike cycle by the Fed will put us into a recession.
And it's going to it's going to bode well worse for those emerging economies because the interest rate hiking tailwinds keep the dollar strong, which is bad for emerging markets too. So
yes, it's going to be really bad for emerging markets. So we continue to own some inverse funds on the emerging markets. I'm just seeing news here that the Binance, that whoever was going to come in and bail them out, is backing out. Oh man, you could have a meltdown, a bankruptcy there, and a real big liquidity problem. It could spread, a contagion that could spread to Coinbase and others like it. Okay, a couple other inverse funds. Fanged continues to do well because of, well, it's, man, that's a strong chart on FNGD. Inverse the Fang Index three times. And you see all those layoffs at Meta. Google has a terrible chart. Netflix has a pretty even chart, even though they had a good earnings report. Amazon has a terrible chart. So Fang is still looking pretty good. And then the last one that's getting hit today, the semiconductors. They've had a little bit of a run. I'm sure there was a lot of short interest in the semiconductors. All of a sudden, NVIDIA came up with the chip is China, approved. And we also had that Global Foundries yesterday had a good report. But now they're back in their downtrends again. All right. Well, if you'd like to get 2 weeks free of the newsletter, GundersonCapital.com. And if you'd like to look for some strategies here for the rest of this year and next year, you can give us a call at 855-611-BEST. 855-611-BEST. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm.
All accounts are held at Ameritrade. Ameritrade is a member of SIPC and FINRA.